Sometimes longer isn't better. So if you're looking for a fantasy NFL game that doesn't last all season, try Paddy Power Fantasy. Every game week is a season in itself. Try it for free on our super short, super free contest on this Sunday's 6pm games. The top 1,500 customers in the contest win a prize with £1,000 for first place. Search Paddy Power Fantasy to pick your team. Paddy Power Fantasy. Hate waiting, love winning. Paddy Power Fantasy rules apply. 18+ BeGambleAware.org.
Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show, presented by Paddy Power Fantasy. Good to have you with us. And week three almost in the bag. The small matter of Monday Night Football coming up a little bit later on. We'll get into that on Wednesday's show with I and Mike, but we're focusing our attention on everything that went down at the weekend and so much to get into, not least the rise of the backup quarterback. So many number twos stepping up and taking center stage. We will let you know how they got on and which teams without their starters are looking more likely to keep contending as a result. The great Greg Brady drops by very soon to get into all the big stories from around the NFL this weekend. Don't forget you can follow us on social media at the NC Show, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Alex, Tom and the guys keeping that rolling 7 days a week. So get stuck in there. Lots of extra content on there as well. I mentioned Wednesday show. That's me and I and Mike going old school. We have a show on Friday as well and our Saturday fantasy show, daily fantasy show. So you want to get involved with Paddy Power Fantasy. That is the place to get your inside skinny and get your game on. Search Paddy Power Fantasy on Google to get involved with that. Right. Terrific stuff. We're going to get things on the road and check in with the great Greg Brady. Greg Brady, good to have you on, man. Week three in the bag already. Where does the time go, my friend? Where does the time go?
And you've got 14 more Sunday night to Monday morning transitions to go to pull off the life that you lead with games starting at 1 a.m. and ending around 4:30. I think it's bad on the East Coast. We got to move to the West Coast of Canada, the United States, Vancouver, Los Angeles, Portland. There's got to be a better
way
to do this.
We'll work on it and take care of business in the off season. I've already been for a 14-kilometer run. That's how I handle it, Greg Brady. So I'm raring to go. Let's start with Sunday Night Football then, seeing as we're talking about the wee small hours over here anyway. And the Rams taking it to improve to 3-0. Wasn't a classic by any stretch of the imagination. Neither team really living up to what we think they're capable of. And of course, a game that has meant that Freddie Kitchens, the Cleveland Browns head coach, under fire once again. When he got the gig, I think there were people that were skeptical about whether he was the kind of player that could take the step up, kind of coach that could take the step up to a head coaching role. And there was the fourth down call in that when the Browns were still very much in it garnered quite a lot of negative attention. So did Freddie Kitchens throw this one away for Cleveland, do you think?
Well, he didn't help, and he was a big factor in the defeat. The play calling, and I can't even believe we're here now with all the promise of the Cleveland Browns after three games. We knew they had a tough early schedule, but kind of gifted a win in week two on Monday night against the Jets. And yet here we are at 1-2, and Baker Mayfield saying, don't blame the play calling. Freddie Kitchens is saying, I'm kicking myself about certain play calls. And you referenced that 4th-and-9 draw play. The history shows, the numbers show, that play hasn't been called. That down and distance, a running play hasn't been called on a play of that nature in 16 seasons. And there's a lot of fired and retired NFL coaches who are like, really? I lost my job and I didn't call a play like that. So right. There's pressure on Freddie Kitchens. And
let's,
I love the whole
in
like, hey, put
though.
It all so on just, me. Blame me. I can take it. Don't blame our players. Don't blame the other coaches. We are blaming you. We are blaming you through three games. And right. It's got to get better before it gets worse, Nat. At San Francisco, at Baltimore, at New England, all in the next 4 weeks.
Not why they wanted to be at all, of course. And maybe that a lot to do with the preseason hype and believing that own hype a little bit. Just on that play call, just to put it in context, it was a difficult situation, difficult field position, right? And the critical thing was, they were 4 points down, I think, with 10 minutes to go. It was a 4th-and-9. They couldn't kick a field goal. That was out of range. And of course, the punt wasn't going to work either. But it was the fact that he called that. Was he trying to outfake McVay, do you think? What was he thinking? I mean, can you apply any kind of logic to why he called that play?
Yeah, a really tricky one to figure out. But yeah, given where they were and given where the ball had moved to, you're still talking at that time. Also, I think we got to remember that's a 17-13 game, not necessarily a 20 to 13 games. Yep. So really tricky to think you're at the Rams 40. I get it. It's too far. It's too long a field goal. So you're not considering that 57 yards with a little bit of swirling wind. Conditions were actually pretty decent given some of the rain around the NFL. But I don't have a clue. And let's face it, the Rams got great field position. That was a pretty costly 3 points. They still needed a touchdown. So maybe that was part of the logic that a field goal only means we need a touchdown to tie, not a touchdown to win. And I'll tell you another thing we don't know. The Browns knocking at the door. They had, what, 4 plays from the 4-yard line. We don't know that had they scored, maybe they go for 2 that late. In front of that crowd, put the Rams defense back. Are you risking the chances in overtime? You've got enough left in a game that was exhausting for both teams, but there's a lot of onus on the Browns. And Nat, I can't tell what the Browns' optimism coming into this season was partially what they were doing and what they were about, but it was also a changing of the guard in Pittsburgh. And now the Big Ben injury, no Antonio Brown back, Le'Veon Bell gone. There was the thought that the Steelers were more vulnerable than ever, that Cincinnati was a downtrodden team. Yeah. So the only X factor was how Lamar Jackson and the Ravens were going to play. But this next week, clearly, what a critical game. They're at Baltimore on the Sunday afternoon. Maybe just a critical 1 o'clock game to not fall 2 games behind the Ravens.
Yeah, they've got the Ravens next week, as you say. And then they've got the 49ers who are looking in pretty fine fettle. The Seahawks, then the Patriots. I mean, things could get pretty ugly. The Brown season could be done and dusted by the end of October, improbably. But I guess looking on the bright side, things could start to gel as well, and they win 2 or 3 of those games. Statement wins they'd be as well. They'd be right back in it. And as you say, the North is winnable, very winnable division.
Well, I think you're hoping. I think Browns fans, I would hope they'd have the logic and the wherewithal to sign up for 4-4. Take 3 of the next 5 games, get to 4-4, and then you're really going to have to make work done on the last half of your schedule. And look at their home games, really. Buffalo, you should beat them. I know the Bills are out of the gate in a hurry. The Steelers have to beat them in a Thursday night home game. Cincinnati at home, Miami at home. So they've got games that I think no matter what, Nat, barring a serious injury of consequence, they're going to be favored probably in all the rest of their home games. It's a question. And you got Pittsburgh and Arizona and Cincinnati on the road. The schedule's right there for them. Get to 4-4 at the halfway point, and potentially you're going to breathe a little bit easier and maybe have an outside shot at the playoffs.
Incidentally, Freddie Kitchens said in his post-game presser, he's kicking himself in the ass, which is a physical achievement I certainly couldn't manage to do. So at least there's something there for Freddie. So the Rams take Sunday Night Football and move to 3-0. Not really an altogether fluent performance from them, but they will absolutely take that with that record. Greg, I want to concentrate most of today's episode on the backup quarterback, because let's face it, the backups don't get enough love generally, and it seems to be, so far, 2019, the season of the backup. Ollie, our producer, has called this backup breakdown, which you could take in different ways. I guess I like it, because we did, of course, Real Deal or No Deal last week. So we're going to roll in something every week to get Greg Brady waxing lyrical. And we're going to focus on the backups this week, because they were so prominent, of course, in week 3. And so many different characters, different stages of their career, different trajectory. You've got the young guns coming in, like Daniel Jones, most notably, the New York Giants rookies come in under immense amount of criticism when they drafted him, or certainly the front office, and nobody was buying him. And here he is now after a sensational performance. We'll get into that. Mason Rudolph coming in for Big Ben, and Teddy Bridgewater for Drew Brees, two playoff bound teams that might not be now. Well, certainly in the case of the Steelers, that looks pretty messy. Jacoby Brissett too, Kyle Allen stepping up. So look, a huge amount I want to get into here. Let's start with Daniel Jones and the New York Giants. And to put this into context for some of our listeners, here's a guy who was drafted sixth overall by the New York Giants, when they had a second pick later on in the round, and most draft nicks and experts in that particular field didn't have him particularly high on any board. So the conclusion was that the Giants overreached for this guy, and he certainly wasn't a quarterback that was getting a huge amount of buzz coming out of college. But they clearly knew what they were getting. They knew what they wanted. They knew that he was the right fit for them. Fast forward 5 or 6 months, and here he is thrust into Giants team week 3 of the season, which probably wasn't the plan. They wanted him to sit down a little bit longer and learn a bit more off Eli Manning, but not at the races in the first couple of weeks of the Giants. So they made the move, and what a debut it was.
Well, what a debut it was. And Nat, I know you and me on Twitter, very responsible human beings. We would never like take a hot take, if you will, on draft night. We are very patient. We Well, I don't know about that, but I was with everybody else. I wasn't quite sure what the Giants were doing. And when you think succession plan in any kind of professional sports, I think the question most people were asking were Eli Manning wasn't going to, you know, magically profoundly find the fountain of youth between 2018 and 2019. So when you're in more the year of the quarterback in the draft in 2018, as talented as Saquon Barkley is, why not make your move then? Why not, you know, be proactive, be ready for anything that can transpire with Eli Manning, knowing he's, as they say, he's not just on the back nine of his career. He's putting on the 18th hole, Matt. He's got, yeah. He doesn't need a wedge. He doesn't need a six iron. He's out the there, man. He's sung. Just got one club left in the bag. So to wait and pass up on potentially Sam Darnold, either of the Joshes, even if you want to experiment and grab Lamar Jackson, trade up and into somewhere late in the first round, why this player and why at this particular time when there were only, really, we only talked about Dwayne Haskins. We really did, who Washington took 15th overall. Daniel Jones felt out of nowhere. But that's the past. The present now is we saw Nat Daniel Jones score two rushing touchdowns that Eli Manning can't score. He can't get into the end zone and do exactly what Daniel Jones did at critical times to get the victory. Couple that with the accuracy, couple that with the fact that we're forgetting Odell Beckham Jr. leaves the Giants. No question. You're not as talented a receiving core, but Evan Engram, from the second he entered this league, a very good tight end. I won't be shocked if someday we're talking, you know, obviously we're in a post Gronk universe now. We might be talking about Evan Engram as one of the best two tight ends in the sport in the next year or two. We really might. And he was fantastic yesterday. Obviously a lot of yards after catch, if you will, on the 75-yard touchdown. But Sterling Shepard has turned into a fantastic number one receiver and is going to get more deep looks than he got when Odell Beckham Jr. was here. Sometimes change is good. And you're right. We were all very skeptical about Daniel Jones. And we don't think of the Giants as this team that does dysfunctional things. Often the Jets do in their own city, state, and stadium. The Lions, the Browns, we know who the usual suspects are. The Dolphins the last 15 years. We know who to question. The Raiders. I can keep going. But the Giants weren't one of those teams really until the last couple years. So this has to give their fans some relief that their long national nightmare might not last terribly long with this quarterback.
It is really fascinating. It's easy to, you know, have 20/20 hindsight revisionist theories. But I remember that the same principle applied with the Amari Cooper trade to the Cowboys, right? That everybody laughed that one out of town and said it's ridiculous. But it absolutely worked for the Cowboys in that situation, in the sense that the deal made a lot of sense if it played out. In other words, if Amari Cooper did what they needed him to and it became a star receiver in that side. And everybody had written him off far too quickly, of course, in Amari Cooper's case. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, an elite receiver not that long ago, but people have got very short memories. The point being that if they knew that was what they needed. And the same principle here, to a degree, with Jones. I know there are some extraordinarily bad reaches in the history of the drafts. And Al Davis, of course, notoriously was amongst quite a few of those back when he was running the Raiders. But this didn't necessarily feel like that. Yeah, sure, they reached up. But straight away, I thought, well, the front office have obviously seen something about this player. And in terms of the direction they want to go in under Shermer, that means he's the right player for them. Even if loads and loads of draft nicks have him way down the first round into the second round, because on merit, on paper, that's probably where he should be. For this particular team in this situation, that's the right fit. And we see that so much in the NFL, Greg, that situation is almost everything. Dak Prescott was a player that dropped down. Nobody bought in, was in the right situation, the right time, the right place. And here he is now about to be paid as one of the best quarterbacks in the game. So I kind of get why he was the pick was criticized. But at the same time, I was a little bit surprised, thinking, just wait and see a minute. This could be exactly what they need. Let's not get carried away here. His first start was sensational. You mentioned on the ground, two rushing touchdowns. He had two more in the air, 336 yards. And maybe most importantly of all, Greg, he masterminded a comeback. They were in a hole in this game, and he didn't blink and dug in and pulled them back into the game.
Yeah, really easy. You're right, on the road. And without talking too long on my end about Jones, because I said a lot in the previous answer, we have to remember, I don't think it's ever been easier, Nat, for quarterbacks to come in out of college and be difference makers right away. Peyton Manning led the league in interceptions and sacks on a 3-13 Indianapolis team his first year. We've seen quarterbacks have their careers blow up for various reasons. Tim Couch, David Carr, Ryan Leaf. sure, there might be, you know, whether it's a maturity issue or you get paid Jamarcus Russell, who you were sort of pseudo referencing with the Raiders. There've been so many times and we could make a long list of teams that have not replaced a Hall of Fame quarterback or an all pro quarterback. Buffalo's hoping, and I know we'll talk about him. Buffalo's hoping Josh Allen is the best hope to be the next Jim Kelly or even 80% of Jim Kelly. Miami's playing badly this year to hope that, you know, the quarterback coming out of Alabama is the next closest thing to what Dan Marino was. Dan Marino hasn't played a game in 19 years, but it takes forever sometimes for these franchises to find the true quarterback they're looking for. We all can't be franchises that go Favre right to Rodgers or Peyton Manning right to Andrew Luck with 1 year in between. Mm-hmm. Most franchises don't get that lucky. So it's one game, as you said, but it's a real positive step for the Giants so far with Daniel Jones.
Yeah, absolutely. The manner of the victory as well, galvanizing a pretty jaded Giants fan base. So a great start for him. What about Kyle Allen? What a performance he had in Carolina, who were very much in must-win territory. Of course, we were chatting to a beat writer on our radio show before the game last night, and he was saying, if this game is lost and they go to 0-3, that is probably the end of the road for Ron Rivera. It could be changing the front office as well. And we know the stats at an 0-3 season is pretty much all she wrote, barring a miracle. But Kyle Allen has stepped up, where Cam Newton looked totally out of sorts, of course, the first couple of games of the season. Allen, the diametric opposite, went 19-26, 144.4 passer rating. It was such a composed performance. And the Carolina Panthers season right back on track.
Well, and I'd absolutely forgot, you'll be forgiven if you did too. I forgot he even started a game at the end of last season Orleans.
He did.
Yeah, it was a nothing game. Remember, the Saints were not playing Drew Brees. Brees had kind of decided to sit, get ready for the playoffs. Their seeding was locked in. And Drew Brees, I think, also thought, well, I've also lost the MVP award to how hard Patrick Mahomes charged to take it away from him. Remember, there were people giving Drew Brees the MVP after 7, 8, 9 weeks of the season, but he was good enough to go down. I know the Saints players played some backups, but I don't know how much we should have read into that because you're right. Kyle Allen was accurate. It looked like their season off to a disastrous start and it's going to go nowhere. And to me, Nat, this was by far the most wide open division, where it was really difficult. You could make the case for the AFC South, but I still think we would have looked and said, well, it's either the Colts or Texans. I do think it's either, and obviously Jacksonville's chances were hurt when Nick Foles was injured. Well, so we thought. I don't know that Gardner Minshew, the legend, will grow over the next 13 weeks. It might have been a peak performance Thursday night. Either way, Carolina had an opportunity to do something here with an aging Matt Ryan, an aging Drew Brees, and what looked like a dysfunctional Tampa Bay. And they just sort of spit out that opportunity the first 2 weeks of the season. Now it seems back on track. And this, I don't think this is Tom Brady taking Drew Bledsoe's job in 2001. And I don't think Kyle Allen's going to be Tom Brady, quite obviously. But they've got an interesting call to make. If Cam's not ready this week, right, and they play at the Texans this week, so you're facing – you know, you're facing J.J. Watt. There's no better test for a young quarterback than having him chase you around all day on the road. If Kyle Allen can look good come out of this, Ron Rivera said it yesterday, Cam Newton's the quarterback when he's healthy, but they'll have a really interesting call because what if Cam can't get fully healthy the rest of this year? They've got a reliable guy who may have won two straight road games. So it's really intriguing in North Carolina and Charlotte with the Carolina Panthers right now.
Just to add a final point on that, Cam Newton into a contract phase, I think, in this off season. So it's a critical year for him. There is a very real chance that they could move on from Cam Newton, improbable as it sounds, particularly, of course, if they're a serious injury concerns, which I think there must be.
And I can't think of a more, I don't know how you felt. I'd like to get your feel for it because I'm sure all your listeners would have a diverse opinion. When he has his 2015, when he's 15-1, when he's an obvious MVP, and I know the Super Bowl didn't go well, but he was brilliant in the two playoff games, just a juggernaut of an offensive quarterback. The first two playoff games that year, they run into a very, very good defense with Denver and Von Miller. And though we all would have taken Cam Newton's arm instead of Peyton Manning's arm in that game, it went so badly for the Panthers. Nat, can you have imagined having this conversation even just 4 years later with an MVP Cam Newton at age 26, and he hasn't won a playoff game since then, and now we're talking about him losing his job?
It was such a seminal season, wasn't it? It was a breakthrough season in all kinds of ways for him. At the same time, it was a little bit like an inverse Eli Manning season for him, where, you know, he was lights out during the regular season and disappeared in the Super Bowl. Manning normally mediocre at best during the regular season, but then saves the best for the big show. And it is incredible. And I think particularly with the injury concerns that are quite deep seated around him now, it will be very, very, if Allen keeps playing, it's a difficult decision for the Panthers to make, but also difficult in terms of where Newton might bounce as a result of that. So yeah, watch that space. But the Panthers definitely up and running. And then some, Christian McCaffrey once again, right?
Oh, yeah.
153 yards and a score, 6.4 yards per attempt there. The Panthers are blowing the Cardinals away in the end, 38-20. Kyler Murray, a rude awakening for him on his latest NFL start. I want to go next to the Colts and Jacoby Brissett, Greg, because as I referenced at the top of the show, the Colts were, a lot of people fancied them for another playoff berth with Andrew Luck, a generational quarterback. Luck shocks everybody by retiring so close to the start of the season. And I think automatically we thought, well, there we go. Then that's the end of the Colts' realistic chances. Brissett is serviceable. He'll do okay. But it's going to be very difficult to see them contend with such a fall off at the quarterback position. But at the moment, he is, shutting the skeptics and the haters up. Another solid performance at one point. He was completely on fire. Ended up with over 300 yards again, a couple of touchdowns, didn't turn over the ball. High completion rate as well. That's underpinned by some decent running led by Marlon Mack. The Colts squeaked past the Falcons 27-24 and are looking legit, aren't they?
Well, they are. And I would have, honestly, it's not me revising history. And I know you've recorded in our more than decade professional association, you've recorded every word I've said. And you remember all my mistakes and terrible predictions. But I would have made a big statement at the start of the year if you'd asked me who my favorite backup was in the league. And this is before the Andrew Luck retirement. It would have either been Jacoby Brissett or it would have been Teddy Bridgewater. Okay. I think Jacoby Brissett is showing that he's a pocket quarterback. We're like, this is not, you know, stereotypes aside, and stereotypes are sometimes based on things that we see via evidence and data, but he doesn't love to run the football. He likes to sit back and sling it, and he likes to drop back and throw it. And he had three carries. I think he's had something like 13 or 14 carries in the three games this year combined. And there really hasn't been a real long run for Jacoby Brissett, but he's a passer, and that's what Bill Belichick saw. Remember, he's on New England's team, but he's blocked not only by Tom Brady, but he's blocked by Jimmy Garoppolo. And they had struggled for years pre-Garoppolo and pre-Jacoby Brissett to find a quarterback that had Tom Brady got down. They'd really gone from the Matt Castle year when Castle replaced Brady for the full season in 2008, and they were still 11-5. And I know Brady never hurt, but remember when he was suspended after the Deflategate controversy, Jacoby Brissett had to step in because Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt that season. So he's had a couple starts. He had 18 starts coming into this year, and I think the Colts have something here. It's why I picked them to win the division at the start of the season, even with the Luck fallout, because this just felt like of all the teams Andrew Luck could retire from, or of all the starting quarterbacks to retire, Nat, let's face it, if Andrew Luck is Matthew Stafford, the Lions don't know what they're doing. If Philip Rivers retires, the Chargers don't know what they're doing. We could list 18 teams that don't have a clue what they would do. The Colts sort of had a contingency plan because Luck's been hurt so much the last 2 years, and it's working out right now.
I really like your point on the style of player. He's unashamedly unreconstructed, isn't he? He's old school in a sea of option, new school, crazy air spread college lunacy that's coming out that is all across the NFL right now. He is old school. I like that about him. All right, so looking good for the Colts, not so much based on what we saw last night for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And it was interesting because out of all the backups that were suddenly front and center, I think there was a lot of buzz about Mason Rudolph at the Steelers, partly I think because of what was coming out of the camp and some of the veterans really talking up a good game and saying that they like him. Also, a really interesting theory surrounding the Minka Fitzpatrick deal, which Steelers gave up a first-round pick to the Dolphins. And Fitzpatrick and you and I obviously have been, I think, quite pro-Fitzpatrick since he came into the league. He's a hell of a player. But nevertheless, if you look at the mathematics and the draft capital, he was, you know, a late teen, round early 20s type pick. So the Steelers are effectively saying, we're going to be a playoff team. We're giving up a first round pick at, that's the level we're anticipating. Not, we're, the sky's going to fall in. Now Roethlisberger's gone down. So they obviously seem to be backing, Mason Rudolph, as well, but it didn't work for him last night, did it?
I'll talk about Rudolph, but on the Fitzpatrick front, I didn't know what the Steelers were doing at first, and I gave it sort of a second. I'm not sure my second and third looks at what Pittsburgh were doing, it made any more sense. But upon reflection, they must be playing the long game here, Nat, and they must have liked this player so much. You mentioned it, you know, he's coached by Nick Saban at Alabama. Alabama and Clemson are 1 and 1A for college football powerhouses, and Alabama puts more players in, to the NFL than Clemson does, at least for the time being. But Nat, they must have loved this player so much that they thought Miami is selling everything. Miami is a, as we call it in North America, a garage sale. So they're getting rid of everybody and everything, that's not bolted down. Let's get him not just for 2019, but let's get him for 20, 21, 22 and beyond. I think the commodity was so great and they thought the price was reasonable enough that they must have also thought, well, here's a guy that's been in the league a couple of years. He's only 22 or a year and a half, I should say.
Yeah.
Better to get him now and not, you know, risk a rival getting him. What if the Ravens get Minka Fitzpatrick? What if the Chargers do? What if the Chiefs do? So I understood the logic there. Now, that's the positive of where Pittsburgh might go. The negative seems to be that, yeah, they had a load of opportunities to win that game against the 49ers and did not. You do not lose too many times when someone turns it over as much as San Francisco did. 5 turnovers, the 2 interceptions, the fumbles that were lost, one of which was Garoppolo, one of which was Raheem Mostert, the running back. You have to take better advantage than that. And it's something Mason Rudolph, though I didn't think the pass pressure was tremendous for San Francisco, he just seemed to be under duress a good chunk of the game. And yeah, the James Conner fumble is the critical thing. But for Pittsburgh, it now looks like a lost season. To me, I know it's on the road. I know it's different time zones away, Nat, but that's the game. If you want to say, go on with Cleveland and Baltimore and say, we are in this division and don't give up just because we've lost our iconic Hall of Fame quarterback, that was the one you had to grab yesterday. Now you're fighting from behind. I will say, Pittsburgh's got 5 of the next 6 games at home. Bengals, Ravens, Dolphins, Colts, Rams, similar to what I was saying with Cleveland. If they could somehow, some way, after 8 games, after 10 games, get back to 500, they've given themselves a fighting chance. But lose one of the next 2, it's probably not going to happen.
And if that happens, and if it is indeed a season to write off, what does that mean for Mike Tomlin, you know, a Super Bowl winning coach in an organization that doesn't like to change their head coaches very often? Of course, one of the things we love about the Steelers, just the durability and the time that they give their head coaches. And we've seen this Greg, of course, you cover so many different sports, but you love our football. And we see it time and time again. The teams that hold firm and don't make too many changes too often, as far as their coaches are concerned, are typically the teams that are the most successful over time. And the Steelers are, the poster boys for that. But do you think this might be enough already as far as Mike Tomlin's tenure is concerned in Pittsburgh?
I could see, that's an interesting question. I could see a mutual parting of the ways, or at least it's scripted that way. And that's quite okay. Mike Tomlin doesn't have to explain to anybody that he's a good coach, and the Steelers don't have to explain to anybody. We're a really good franchise. We end up treating people the right way. We may even give them, given what happened last year with some of Antonio Brown and until it just became too much. And look at the hard stance they took on Le'Veon Bell. That's, the Cowboys would not have taken the stance on Le'Veon Bell. Though I'm not saying the situation is exactly the same as Ezekiel Elliott. It's not. But Pittsburgh took a real hard line last year. And you're right. 3 head coaches since 1969. Chuck Knoll, 342 games coach. Bill Cowher, 240 games coach. Mike Tomlin, 192 games coach. They all have a Super Bowl. So I think it's all have a Super Bowl title. And obviously Chuck Knoll has multiple ones. So I've got this theory, and it's an interesting one that might kick around in your head for a while after we broadcast, that if you left any starting quarterback and any head coach alone, regardless of win-loss record and circumstances, and gave them 8 years, the results would often be better than continuing to change. And we've talked about this in the AFC East, the Patriots. Sure. Patriots love the chaos of the Jets, the Bills, the Dolphins, new coach, new quarterback. It's like a washer dryer system for your clothes, just socks tumbling around in there over and over again, and they lose each other. And New England has that one constant, which is Belichick and Brady. So yeah. I could see Mike Tomlin not wanting to be part of something that rebuilt, but I could also see him digging in if Big Ben's healthy or they want to go another route at quarterback, saying, I'm all about the loyalty factor here, and I've had chances maybe to put my name out there before. I bet you Mike Tomlin's the coach next year, unless Pittsburgh just says this is finally now the time to tear it down and start some things over. But like I said, when they trade for Fitzpatrick, they're telling you they're not about to concede on the seasons to come.
Yeah, exactly. And Roethlisberger has said he's coming back next season, which is a marked difference from how he's been in a lot of recent seasons over the last 3 or 4 years when off seasons, when he's talked about maybe it's time to hang him up. So interesting times for Pittsburgh, but all is not lost, as you say. Put a run together and suddenly they're, 3-4, .500 halfway through the season, and anything is possible. Let's have a quick line on a couple of the other backups, yeah. Front and center. Teddy Bridgewater, a much more composed performance from him. No surprise there, really. As you said, he is one of the better backups in the NFL, and I think you know what you get with him. We and Sean Payton faked us out a little bit, I think, going into the game, saying that he didn't have a de facto starter, and Taysom Hill was going to see a lot of action as well, but it was Bridgewater that got the majority of the snaps, of course. 33-27, it was a thriller against Seattle. But the Saints win, improved to 2-1. What's your prognosis about New Orleans with Breece coming back at some point? Remember, he's not out for the season in the same way Big Ben is. New Orleans going to be okay, do you think?
Yeah, they look like the division winner there to me, because Atlanta's been so inconsistent. And we talked about Carolina's struggles earlier, as much as Carolina sort of bounced things back a little bit. Bridgewater was very good. What a clean game. No sacks, no interceptions. He threw the ball away when he needed to. We can't forget that Seattle pass rush. It's not what it once was. We're not talking Legion of Boom, but they do. I thought they rushed Bridgewater a fair bit. And again, Bridgewater's a guy that really only took off the one time to run. He had an 11-yard run, and he had 2 carries for 1 yard on the other carry. So Alvin Kamara was back in the 92 yards receiving. He might be. I think it's Christian McCaffrey, Nat, and everybody else. Alvin Kamara might make a case for as a dual threat back, the second best guy in the league. I mean, he had 161 yards combined, touchdown through the air, touchdown on the ground. I think New Orleans is going to hang in just fine. And I didn't have them as a playoff team, but I also didn't see some of the chaos happening with Cam Newton not being healthy, not being ready to go. Didn't see, I think Philadelphia starting 1-2. We would have locked them in for the playoffs. So the NFC playoffs, as we said, AFC, you look like you knew who 5 of the 6 teams might be. The NFC, 11 teams probably could have been playoff teams, and you'd shrug your shoulders and go, yeah, you can make the case for it. So love where New Orleans is at.
He's really interesting actually looking at some of the other contenders in the NFC. The Vikings getting things back on track with a win over the Raiders, and boy, did Kirk Cousins need that afternoon. The Falcons, just a prototypical of their season so far, going down 27-24 to the Colts, and Matt Ryan looking lights out at times, but throwing another pick at a crucial stage. They got the running game going a little bit more, but not where they need it to be, and that's been a big problem for them this season. Julio Jones stepping up again, but they've got this brilliant receiving core of him and Ridley and Sanu, but they're not just not turning it on consistently enough. So the Falcons are frustration.
I think there's a lot of concern in Atlanta, and I when it goes for some quarterbacks, and again, lifetime Dolphins fan, Dan Marino fan, you start to see it, though he'd have his moments. He'd have good game, good series, bad series. Here's another one. We talked about Cam Newton. The spiral of Matt Ryan is concerning right now. He leads the league in interceptions after 3 games, asking him to do a lot. I wish they could ask him to do a little less. And I know 5 incompletions yesterday. So the quarterback rating's great. He's an 85% completion rate, but it's some of the passes he's hitting on a regular basis, and even how he was most of last season. We saw his QBR shrink to, I think it's the lowest level it had been in 6 years, and it's lower than that through 3 games this year. So I think they're going to get good games from Matt Ryan, Nat, but Atlanta would be well served to do exactly what we've been talking about with some of these other franchises, and it might be time for them to think about drafting his successor or trading for his successor. I know he's not even 35 yet, but when it goes, it can go quickly, and I'm worried it's going to go quickly with Matt Ryan here.
Okay, interesting. Just a quick line on Josh Rosen and Luke Falk at Miami and the Jets, respectively. Rosen acquitted himself better out of the two, not really a high bar, because Falk was just a rabbit in the headlights, wasn't he? But I guess going into this, the rest of this season, I think starting to look a little bit brighter for Miami now. They were competitive at the very least in the first half against the Cowboys. The Cowboys running away with it in the second half, 31-6, the final there. But at least Rosen, he threw a strike to Devontae Parker, mixed things up a bit. Preston Williams, their new receiver, getting in the mix as well. That's a bit more energy about them than they have had in previous weeks.
There is that. Yeah. I don't love the 18 for 39. That's got to get tidied up a little bit, but we've got to ask so much about Miami, and football is just this ultimate team sport. You really do. We were talking about Baker Mayfield and the offensive line struggles that they've had. So Josh Rosen's not, and he wasn't last year, obviously. He's not being put in a great position to succeed just yet. So he's tough to evaluate. And yeah, if they finish last overall, and that seems to be, in essence, almost the goal, they're going to draft a quarterback. They're going to draft Tua out of Alabama, and he's going to start week one next season. So then what is Josh Rosen giving you traded for a quarterback? It's really tough quarterback to evaluate, but I'm sure he looks over at the other Josh in Buffalo, in Josh Allen, and says, I'd love to have that infrastructure. Right now, I'm not getting the chance to succeed.
Yeah, indeed. He said, really difficult start to his career, but maybe it'll come good. Maybe it is the right place he needs to be right now as they rebuild and develop, and maybe he's the guy to build around. Quick line on the Antonio Brown. The latest chapter in that story, Greg, things have moved as we've been watching very closely from odd to surreal, eccentric to quite sinister and unpleasant. And now he's out of New England. He's hit social media on Sunday morning in the States, and after being quite graceful and pragmatic about his exit from Foxborough initially, changed his tune quite significantly and is taking on everybody. Out of the NFL for the time being, out of the NFL for good, do you think?
I do. I think he's played his last NFL game. I think it would take a long time. It won't be at any point this season, and I don't think it would even be at the start of next season. We've talked how easy it is in the NFL, and look at the Colin Kaepernick situation, which has so many different layers to it and so many different, principles. But what can't be argued is that NFL owners did not want Colin Kaepernick under certain circumstances in their training camp or on their football team. We're talking about a more talented player at his position right now on this day that we speak, in Antonio Brown, but it's just no longer a football story. And I think he could have survived the Patriots or stayed on the team and thrived, without the revelation of text messages to one of his accusers of sexual assault / harassment. I think the Patriots had a case that, look, whatever happened in the past is in the past, and since he's been a Patriot, this is what he's done. That doesn't work when you're a New England Patriot. They find out you've put this, as you said, sinister is the right word. It's bang on. Put this sinister, scenario at play to make a woman and or her children feel threatened. New England didn't have a choice. And I guess we're going to applaud them for making this choice right now. But I'm sure there's Patriots fans that felt a little dirty. And that happens in sports sometimes. You're not sure you've got the best character player, but you roll with the punches and hope that there can be some kind of rehabilitation or rejuvenation of their character. I think the Patriots realized right away, if they had problems 8-9 days into his tenure here, that it was going to get worse before it gets better. And it's too bad. It's too bad for the team, and it's too bad for some of his teammates who may have really enjoyed him as a person. But I don't think the conduct was defensible, and they had to do what they had to do.
Well said. I think the XFL, and I'm not being facetious here, might be a realistic landing spot for him. You know, the Vince McMahon backed alternative to the NFL. It's the kind of thing that they need a marquee signing if NFL teams won't touch him. It's something I could conceivably see happening. It's not going to bother the Patriots significantly. As you say, they've lost a player who is, irrespective of the off-the-field antics, one of the... Go for it, Greg. Do you want to pick that up?
Well, I think Josh Gordon, that's really interesting that you bring that up, because now look what happened last year. Josh Gordon wasn't a flash in the pan. He played 11 games there. They really need to make sure, if he realizes this is his last chance at 28 and so many struggles with I think staying healthy and staying away from a substance abuse issue. I think for the Patriots to win the Super Bowl, Nat, or even to get back and get past to Kansas City, now it's more prominent and more important than ever that Josh Gordon's part of the team. I'd say that.
Yeah, indeed, Josh Gordon, and it's a very different story, of course, to Antonio Brown, but a player who has dealt with adversity, and I think every neutral watching the NFL would love to see him on a Super Bowl winning side, certainly playing at a high level once again. Let's stay with the Patriots and stay with the AFC in general, Greg, because it's an interesting picture that is shaping up. The Patriots easing past the Jets, unsurprisingly. The scoreline a little bit deceptive, 30-14 in the end. Doesn't really tell the story. New England were never in any kind of danger at all. And a pick six from Jarrett Stidham, who came on for Tom Brady as they finally decided to rest him and bench him, made that scoreline a little bit more flattering for the Jets. But they keep rolling on in their defense, one of the best units in the NFL. Right now, stepping up once again against a lackluster Gang Green. At Kansas City, Baltimore lived up to the hype. Patrick Mahomes, another sensational performance from him. He seemingly got better than what we saw last season with his MVP career-defining year to date. Another 300-yard performance. Some absolute bullets fired around. It looked like they were going to run away with it, the Chiefs, but credit to Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. They hung in there and had opportunities and some head-scratching decisions as well, particularly the gung-ho going for it on 2 points a couple of times, which maybe cost them in terms of momentum and, I guess, strategy in terms of where that left them and how it left them chasing the game. But here we are with the Patriots and the Chiefs quite clearly the strongest performers so far in the AFC. Have we already got our AFC championship game locked and loaded, or is there an argument that another team might sneak in that we're not necessarily taking as seriously as we should?
Well, it would be a sneak. Like, so you're answering your own question and you read my mind. This just feels like everybody else in the conference. So you can look at the Ravens. You can look at the 3-0 Buffalo Bills. It feels like they're playing for the right to go to either Foxborough or Arrowhead and lose in mid-January. And that's great. Those are big steps for some of those franchises, perhaps. But it just, and I couldn't tell you where the game would be, New England or Kansas City. I don't think there's a clear and definitive number one. But I'll tell you, they play December 8th in Foxborough, Kansas City at New England, a 4:25 Eastern time game, 9:25 UK time. And wouldn't that be fun, whether you love either team or not? And a lot of people don't love the Patriots. Wouldn't it be fun if they were both 12-0? What's better than that? Like, right. It's you're laying it right out there on December the 8th. But, and I'll tell you, looking up the AFC, and I did this last night, so it's fresh in mind, there has not been an AFC title game rematch, Nat, in back-to-back years since John Elway played. You've got to go back to 86-87 for those Denver-Cleveland games. First the drive, and then the fumble. Listeners our age will know what I'm referring to, and the Browns really never coming as close since then. Yeah. But that's hard to believe. For all the Big Ben, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady years, it's hard to believe that the Steelers or Colts or even Broncos and Patriots Dodgers never met back-to-back, but they haven't.
That is extraordinary. Great. Firstly, props on the deep dive stat. Loving that work. Look, we know home field advantage is instrumental, particularly when we're talking, or certainly about Arrowhead, and I'd argue in an AFC championship game in the deep depths of winter at Foxborough as well. But projecting ridiculously far ahead and dismissing everybody else in the AFC, I can see the Chiefs beating the Patriots at Arrowhead. Can you see the Chiefs going into Foxborough in the AFC championship game and winning this year?
Well, I can, but there's something about it depends if I'm going to that game or not, because I have this strange in-person thing, and you and I experienced it in Minneapolis. I have been to every Belichick-Brady Super Bowl defeat, and I have never seen them win one. And I've even seen them lose an AFC divisional playoff to the Baltimore Ravens and Joe Flacco there. So if I'm not at that game, Nat, the Patriots will win and succeed, and the evil empire will continue to triumph. Darkness will... Well, this will be more The Empire Strikes Back than Return of the Jedi. If I am somehow at that game, or you and I are somehow at that game, Kansas City's a lock. The Patriots just don't win these huge games when I show up. The Eagles beat them in the Super Bowl, or Eli Manning beats them in the Super Bowl. It's uncanny.
Oh, that is great. I'll make sure I will let the Patriots front office and organization know that very important stat and make sure that you are kept, they keep you well away from it.
Well, the Patriots should pay me not to be there, Nat, and the Chiefs should pay me to be there. So I'll take the highest bidder. Whichever way that goes, it's going to be a great game either way, but it makes for it, to be a capitalist this one time for me seems like the right move.
Incidentally, on the Patriots, did you see Belichick with the death stare, that doing the rounds with the reporter? Did you see that clip?
Not a lot of fun. And we've been in the, I know you and I have been on that side of a death stare. And, I'm sure, the Sir Alex Ferguson, there's been some Sir Alex Ferguson and Jose Mourinho moments for interviewers that make them uncomfortable. But I wish he'd handle it any way but that. And if you can't say anything about Antonio Brown, just say that you can't. Just say that it's your choice not to. Tom Brady was on a show in Boston just several hours ago, as I heard, and just said, I've got personal feelings about it, but I'm going to keep them to myself because they're personal. That's easy. That's easy. Just, man, take the high road sometimes. And I wish Bill Belichick wouldn't behave that way. And it's just a no-win situation for everybody.
I guess in his defense, I wonder whether he was just kind of slightly zoning out. Because she asked the question, he knocked it back. A reporter asking a question about Antonio Brown, he knocks it back. And then she, quick as a flash, said, thank you, coach. And then he just stayed and hung there and stared at her with it. Yeah, a deep, dark glare. I don't want to ever play poker with Belichick, that's for sure. But I just wonder whether he just drifted off for a moment. And I don't mean that in the sense that he had a senile moment. But I mean, I just wonder whether he was just thinking about something else. And is there a follow-up question? Oh, there's not. And whether he wasn't necessarily being as aggro. We'll tweet that out from our handle at the end of the show. And you can have a look at that. Make your own mind up about that. So just very quickly ending this point then, Greg. If we think it is likely to be a Chiefs-Patriots AFC Championship game, and nothing is leading us to believe anything different, who are those contenders bubbling under? Baltimore, I think, acquitted themselves well, so still have to be in that conversation, even if maybe some teams were getting a little bit carried away. The Colts are in that mix as well. Are the Texans going to be there or thereabouts?
Yeah, I would. I mean, if you're asking who the other four play, I had Jacksonville as the last wild card getting in. I thought it all could come together for them. I would rescind that pick now based on the Foles injury. And I would certainly, and on the Jalen Ramsey's trade request, those two factors right there take Jacksonville out of the mix for me. I have not been pleased by the LA Chargers play. I think they need a really big next couple weeks, to show it. I didn't think they were going to win the division, that's for sure. And remember, they flirted with it the last couple of years with Patrick Mahomes as quarterback and even with Alex Smith at quarterback a couple of years ago. They were playing around with the Chiefs a little bit, getting in their heads. I need to see a lot more from the LA Chargers and the Buffalo Bills. Look, if they beat New England this weekend at games in Buffalo, then the whole lid blows off and there's a lot of Bills hype surrounding that team. But I look and I go, who's the most likely to unseat the master plan? To me, it's probably to me the Indianapolis Colts. I believe in Jacoby Brissett. I think they've got the roster. They'll get their home games at home in a dome, quite obviously, at least that first week. But I think we agree they're going to have to go to Arrowhead or, which again, people think nice weather. Nah, not usually. Sometimes it's terrible in January there. And we all know it's going to be cold at Foxborough almost universally. So Indy's my team if neither of those two can make it.
The sleeper pick. Cracking work. If you want to follow Greg on Twitter, I should, quite frankly, at Greg Brady TO. You see, I got it right this week. I've worked with you for 12 years, but there was an old Twitter handle back in the day, wasn't there? I wasn't imagining that. So
I've changed maybe four times, not for any other, not for security, not because of stalkers, for no other reason than it keeps people on their toes like you, Nat.
There you go. That's the sole reason. The Twitter handle may have changed, but you haven't, my friend. Still bringing the A-game. Cracking work, Greg. Always a pleasure, and we'll be checking in with you very soon.
Enjoy the week.
Fabulous stuff there, as ever, from Mr. Brady. We'll be hearing a lot from him throughout the course of the season. Mark my words. Hope you enjoyed. We'll be back on Wednesday. Me and I, Mike Ben Isaacs, might drop by as well for a bit of college chat. And of course, we'll get ready for week four of the NFL with our Friday show. That drops around about lunchtime on a Friday, Saturday morning for our daily fantasy show with me and the OG, Ollie Giel. Lots of bonus video content as well that we're making, flying out over on the ESPN UK YouTube channel and on our social channels as well at the NC Show. One more thing, gang. If you haven't already, subscribe to us wherever you listen to us. Big shout out to the Podbean guys. Actually, we're on the homepage of Podbean this week. We appreciate that. So thank you very much for the support and love. Subscribe to us and you won't miss an episode. And if you have time, you have 30 seconds, hop on to your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a nice review. It all helps put smiles on the faces of ESPN, the sponsors and everything. You get the drill by now. Right. Me and I, Mike, back Wednesday. We'll see you then. Bye for now.